collapse, that that would not be a good thing to happen. And so I think that there will be, you know, significant discussions about the debt limit vote. That's something that nobody ever likes to vote on. But, you know, once John Boehner is sworn in as a speaker, then he's going to have responsibilities to govern. You can't just stand on the sidelines and be a bomb thrower. And so my expectation is that we will have tough negotiations around the budget, but that ultimately we can arrive at a position that is keeping the government open, keeping Social Security checks going out, keeping veterans services being provided, but at the same time is prudent when it comes to the taxpayer dollars. Jonathan Weissman, last question.
Some on the left have questioned, I've looked at this deal and questioned what your core values are, what specifically you will go to the mat on. I'm wondering if you can reassure them with some specific things and saying, all right, this is where I don't budge. And one and along those lines, what is going to be different in 2012 when all of these tax cuts again are up for expiration?
Well, what's going to be different in 2012, we've just discussed, which is we will have had 2 years to discuss the budget. Not in the abstract, but in concrete terms. I mean, over the last 2 years, the Republicans have had the benefit of watching us take all these emergency actions, having us have preside over a $1.3 trillion deficit that we inherited, and just pointing fingers and saying, that's their problem. Well, over the next 2 years, they're going to have to show me what it is that they think they can do. And I think it becomes pretty clear after you go through the budget line by line that if, in fact, they want to pay for $700 billion worth of tax breaks to wealthy individuals, that that's a lot of money. And that the cuts, corresponding cuts that would have to be made, are very painful. Either they rethink their position, or I don't think they're going to do very well in 2012. So that's on the first point. With respect to the bottom line in terms of what my core principles are, look, I've got a whole bunch of lines in the sand. Not making the tax cuts for the wealthy permanent. That was a line in the sand. Making sure that the things that most impact middle-class families and low-income families, that those were preserved. That was a line in the sand. I would not have agreed to a deal, which, by the way, some in Congress were talking about, of just a 2-year extension on the Bush tax cuts and 1 year of unemployment insurance, but meanwhile, all the other provisions of earned income tax credit or other important breaks for middle-class families like the college tax credit, that those had gone away just because they had Obama's name attached to them instead of Bush's names attached to them. So this notion that somehow we are willing to compromise too much reminds me of the debate that we had during health care. This is the public option debate all over again. So I pass a signature piece of legislation where we finally get health care for all Americans, something that Democrats had been fighting for 100 years, but because there was a provision in there that they didn't get that would have affected maybe a couple of million people, even though we got health insurance for 30 million people and the potential for lower premiums for 100 million people, that somehow that was a sign of weakness and compromise. Now, if that's the standard by which we are measuring success or core principles, then let's face it, we will never get anything done. People will have the satisfaction of having a purist position and no victories for the American people. And we will be able to feel good about ourselves and sanctimonious about how pure our intentions are and how tough we are. And in the meantime, the American people are still seeing themselves not able to get health insurance because of pre-existing condition, or not being able to pay their bills because their unemployment insurance ran out. That can't be the measure of how we think about our public service. That can't be the measure of what it means to be a Democrat. This is a big, diverse country. Not everybody agrees with us. I know that shocks people. You know, the New York Times editorial page does not permeate across all of America. Neither does the Wall Street Journal editorial page. Most Americans, they're just trying to figure out how to go about their lives and how can we make sure that our elected officials are looking out for us. And that means, because it's a big, diverse country and people have a lot of complicated positions, it means that in order to get stuff done, we're going to compromise. This is why FDR, when he started Social Security, it only affected widows and orphans. You did not qualify. And yet now it is something that really helps a lot of people. When Medicare was started, it was a small program. It grew. Under the criteria that you just set out, each of those were betrayals of some abstract ideal. This country was founded on compromise. I couldn't go through the front door of this country's founding. And, you know, if we were really thinking about ideal positions, we wouldn't have a union. So my job is to make sure that we have a North Star out there. What is helping the American people live out their lives? You know, what is giving them more opportunity? What is growing the economy? What is making us more competitive? And at any given juncture, there are going to be times where my preferred option, what I'm absolutely positive is right, I can't get done. And so then my question is, does it make sense for me to tack a little bit this way or tack a little bit that way, because I'm keeping my eye on the long term and the long fight, not my day-to-day news cycle, but where am I going over the long term? And I don't think there's a single Democrat out there who, if they looked at where we started when I came into office and look at where we are now, would say that somehow we have not moved in the direction that I promised. Take a tally. Look at what I promised during the campaign. There's not a single thing that I've said that I would do that I have not either done or tried to do. And if I haven't gotten it done yet, I'm still trying to do it. And so to my Democratic friends, what I'd suggest is, let's make sure that we understand this is a long game. This is not a short game. And to my Republican friends, I would suggest, I think this is a good agreement, because I know that they're swallowing some things that they don't like as well. And I'm looking forward to seeing them on the field of competition over the next 2 years. Thanks very much, everybody.
What about starting gold ash in the land?
Is the deal set in stone, sir?
President Barack Obama winding up a news conference at the White House, speaking for a little over half an hour, dealing exclusively with economics and politics of his agreement with congressional Republicans yesterday for a two-year extension of the Bush-era tax cuts, including an extension for the wealthiest Americans, in return for compromises on their parts for extended jobless benefits and some other tax cuts. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and with me here in the studio are Ron Elving, NPR Senior Washington Editor, Ari Shapiro, NPR White House Correspondent, John Itzi, Economics Correspondent, and there is a couple of lines that we may remember from that news conference. And Ari Shapiro, there was one moment when the president said the Republicans, it would be tempting to not negotiate with hostage takers. He was using an analogy, but unless the hostage dies. And he said
That's
the
right.
Hostage in this case is the American public, the middle class.
This is the line that you're going to see quoted in every story about this press conference, that he kept accusing the Republicans of holding the middle class tax cuts hostage, holding the middle class hostage. For the last 2 years, he was saying that. And so the question was, why have you changed your tune? You caved to the hostage takers. And he said, well, if the hostage is going to be killed, in so many words, he said, then you negotiate with the hostage takers. And he was arguing, you may as a Democrat believe firmly in certain things, but if Americans are going to be hurt by your holding to those ideals, better to accomplish what you can then stay true to your ideals and accomplish nothing. That argument may not be satisfying to some on the left. In fact, it most certainly is not, but that was his argument.
And the impact on Americans, he said, if there was a protracted battle over these tax cuts that lasted for months, well, tax rates would increase as of January 1st for middle-class Americans. Jobless benefits would not be there. People would fall over the edge. But he was also asked a question about the broader question of his negotiating strategy with Republicans, Ron Elving. And basically, if they hold firm, as they have very largely over the past 2 years, haven't they figured out a way to hold his feet to the fire on anything?
The president was asked again and again by different reporters in different ways, why should the Republicans give you anything when all they have to do is remain united and they prevail? And the president made reference early in the press conference, but not again as he went on, to the way the Senate works. The Republicans, if they hold together in the Senate, can stop anything from going through the Senate. The Democrats don't have enough votes to stop the Republicans' implicit filibuster threat, which gets a little wonky to talk about. The president obviously didn't want to go there, but those are the facts. And with 42 Republicans all signing a letter saying nada, nothing goes through, the president has no more options.
John Itzde, I wanted to turn to you on some of the economic repercussions. Was the president's analogy apt? Were middle-class Americans being held hostage? He also made a statement that he could not get the Republicans to budge on this because tax breaks for the wealthy, Republicans might not put it this way, but tax breaks for the wealthy are their sine qua non, their central economic policy.
Well, I think certainly this would have had there would have been an effect, a big effect on Americans if these tax cuts had not been extended. The president quoted a number I think is probably in the ballpark, a $3,000 tax hit for the average family. And also, remember, extension of unemployment benefits part of this package as well. And, you know, 2 million people or so out of unemployment benefits after the first of the year. So there was going to be a significant effect on the American people. And he said, you know, my first priority is to get them jobs, get the economy growing, make sure taxes don't go up, and not extend this fight in Washington.
And the argument about the Republicans and their economic policies, is it fair to characterize them as having one policy alone, and that's tax breaks for the wealthy?
I don't think that's a fair analysis, personally. I mean, they have they certainly care about tax cuts. They believe low tax rates are very, very important to economic growth, and think that the tax rates across the board, extension of the tax rates across the board, will help the economic recovery. I would say most economists say there is not going to be much stimulus from the extension of those tax breaks for the wealthy in the near term, because they will save the money that they get back in taxes and not spend it, as will people in lower incomes.
And Ron Elving, getting back to the point you made before the president started to speak, the era of triangulation may be back with us. In that last question, President Obama sounding more combative than he had at any other point in this news conference, saying, I want to speak to my Democratic friends.
Yes, meaning those Democratic friends who are currently incensed with me because I have not stuck with the position they wanted me to go right past the 1st of January with, drive the car over the cliff and say, let's keep fighting this. Let's let the American people focus on who wants tax cuts for millionaires and who wants tax cuts for people under $250,000 joint filers. There are those who feel this is the time to join that struggle and see what happens. The president said his North Star, and this is the positive side of the hostage taker analogy, the positive side is he said, our North Star has to be the well-being of the American economy and the American people. And if that doesn't indicate that we should drive over the cliff, I'm not going to drive it.
But, you know,
go ahead, Ari.
The president was pretty savvy in framing this as deal or no deal. Either we get the package that I put on the table, or we get nothing and the taxes go up for every American on January 1st. I think there are people on the left who would say you could have gotten a better deal than you did. You could have either gotten a permanent extension of the taxes for the tax benefits for parents of students and things like that. You could have gotten something along the lines of the Dream Act, the START Treaty, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal. And instead, they think that the deal that the president got was far less than he could have accomplished in exchange for the two-year extension of the tax cuts for the wealthy.
And in fact, he was asked a question, might not you have wanted to get the agreement to raise the debt limit? This is going to be a debate when Congress comes back in January, the new Congress, and this is going to be a debate that's going to be, well, fascinating, because some of the new senators,